from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Actress and director Rose McGowan is tired of the way women are treated in Hollywood. She's got plenty of experience. She recently tweeted a bit from an Adam Sandler casting call, push-up bras encouraged. And that's the least of it. She's out with a daring new short film called Dawn, and she's assembling an army, she says, to finally take on Hollywood over exploitation and gender. This hour on Point, Rose McGowan and more on sexism today in Hollywood. With me now from Culver City, California, is Rose McGowan, actress, director of the new short film Dawn. You can watch it at our website, onpointradio.org. You know her from the films Jawbreaker, Scream, the television series Charmed, and much more. Rose McGowan, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hello, how are you?
Good, and very glad to have you with us. You're on a tear lately on this front that we've been watching for some months now. We thought, you know, sooner or later we need to talk to Rose about what flipped her trigger here. Did this just build up over years, or was it really? Surely it wasn't just one casting instruction for an Adam Sandler film.
No, it was not just one casting thing for an Adam Sandler film. I think it was because I'd taken, you know, kind of a break from Hollywood in general, mm-hmm. that it, when I saw it, it just made me start laughing at the stupidity. And just basically, I'd kind of been fed up as a human and as an audience member, because I am that before I am an actress and an insider, quote unquote. So it was just kind of like, wow, really, Hollywood, this is what you're doing still? And because I travel so much, and I come from Europe, I feel like I see things a little bit differently. It's a very insidery place, coming at it from an outside perspective, and it's getting embarrassing to say you're from here.
I want to play just a little bit from your film Dawn, if I may.
Sure.
Talking about a way back machine here, it's set in what, 1961 or so.
Exactly.
Dawn's a teenage girl. She develops a crush on a boy she meets at a gas station. But here she is in a clip with her mother talking about another woman at church. Talk about old-time perspectives.
Poor Myrtle. She's never going to find herself a new husband if she keeps showing up to church just like that every Sunday. She's too young to be a widow.
Mm-hmm.
She could ask for help. No, she's too proud. Always thinks she knows best, that Myrtle. You mind Miss Myrtle as an example, Dawn?
Yes, ma'am.
There are certain things that a lady can't ignore when it comes to pleasing a man. Taking care of our looks, being easygoing.
Taking care of our looks, being easygoing, from Rose McGowan's short film, Dawn. She's not acting in this one. She's directing. Rose, did you go to directing to get more control over your experience of movie making?
I went to directing because I wanted to have my own artistic voice. It's one thing to interpret other people's minds and their versions or their ideas of creativity, what their idea is, really. And it's just basically, it's even though I've spoken in films, certainly, as an actor, it was never my words, you know. So this is actually my voice for the first time.
And when you take us all the way back to 1961, and you've got this very buttoned-up view that Dawn's mother opens up with there, you know, take care of your looks, be easygoing, and all the rest, the old kind of stereotypes about women. What are you saying?
That nothing has changed.
That's a long time. That's many, many decades now. How can that be true? So much looks like it's changed in our bigger world.
Well, can you imagine how boring it must be for women out there with this attitude is still going on, that this is still happening? I looked at some of the comments on your website this morning in anticipation of coming on here,
I cannot take responsibility for everything.
Of course not. Believe me, the people that comment on things, I mean, I've dealt with, you know, it's a form of bullying, and I've dealt with it worldwide for my whole career. You know, at one point, either just from the newsprint press to you know, digital media. It's kind of the same for I'm not unique in getting beaten up online, but it is like, isn't this sexism talk from somebody who's shown their bits and pieces? But it's no different from recently, you know, somebody says, you need to start dressing like a director. What does that mean exactly? Oh, so I should dress like the men in this town that wear like schlubby shorts, puffy white tennis shoes, and a baseball hat? That's what I have to look like? No. If I walk down the street wearing a bikini, I am still a director. It has no bearing on it. And the fact that we're still, I guess, talking about this, you know, and it's been going on for hundreds and hundreds of years. It's just, I would just implore people to imagine how boring it is for a woman to have to deal with this stuff. It just gets so tired. And really, that's what spurred me on and is spurring me on. It's not about a single incident. It's about, frankly, feeling a lot more advanced and with it than a lot of the people that I'm around here.
Take us into that experience. I mean, you've been in the business for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
What about what you've come up against and what you're still seeing that we may not understand? I mean, we see these big studies that come out and they say, I mean, what the one, was it earlier this month, said 30% of all speaking or named characters in the 100 top grossing fictional films are women. I can imagine some people looking at that and saying, well, you know, that's almost a third and...
good for them.
Yeah. It's not so bad. Take us into what the experience of working in that world, where it's brought your perspective.
The experience of working in this world, for me, you know, Hollywood's very patriarchal, and it kind of, the machine here kind of serves, and I was a young woman, very young, when I started, and it kind of massages your brain in a certain way, and it's very much, you know, be a good girl. There's another one coming to take your place. Be a good girl if you don't do this. And the way, you know, I was thinking about it recently, and even from women towards, you know, women in the industry, women on the business side, and how they look at actresses and how they treat them, it's almost like, well, it's almost the equivalent, honestly, in how society kind of views actresses as well. Well, it's like the equivalent of a judge saying, well, you wore a short skirt. You asked to be raped.
How literally do you mean that?
I mean it both ways, literally and metaphorically.
I mean, you, as you say, you came very young. I've read you saying that you had no protectors. We've all seen the Cosby stuff that's come out in this sort of terrible mm-hmm. drip for months now.
One of our most prolific rapists, by the way, as he should go down in history being known.
That may be hard to argue with, given the numbers that at this point have
yes.
come out. Do you look at that and say, wow, that is one weird one-off with Bill Cosby? Or do you look at that and say, oh, yeah, I know that world.
Oh, I know that world. No, I know that world. And I know, and it's the amount, the machine around Bill Cosby that had to work to stay in place, to protect him and to get him what he wanted, which was to ruin lives. You know, it's staggering, and the collusion involved, and that's done on every level here towards, it's not just a crying sexism and women being discarded, women being hurt. That is all true, and that's all coming from the inside, but I almost see it for me as an outside perspective, I'm an audience member. I see Hollywood like from the outside. I know the inside extremely well. But from an outside perspective, which is one that you might have and mm-hmm. I share mm-hmm. probably with many others, it's cringeworthy what's going on. It's cringeworthy what's on the screen. And women are 50% of an audience, if not more. And movies essentially are being made to please 13-year-old boys in their mother's basements, to which I would say there are a lot more Americans out there that aren't 13 and living in their mother's basement. There's a lot of audience members that are being ignored, women and men, thinking people.
The way you've
even
begun,
if it's a comedy, think.
Yeah. The way you've begun to, through social media, has kind of talk to us about this has turned people's heads. You know, BuzzFeed reported exactly how, I mean, in the Adam Sandler movie, the instructions were, please make sure you read the attached script before coming in so you understand the context of the scenes. Wardrobe note, black or dark form-fitting tank that shows off cleavage, push-up bras encouraged, and form-fitting leggings or jeans. And you tweeted a link to the casting note that came with script I got today, for real. Name of male star rhymes with Madam Panhandler. Ha ha ha, I die. Out goes your tweet, you go to bed, and the next day you've got an email. Is this true? From Innovative Artists, your agency that dropped you as a client on the basis of a grumbling about that?
It was about a week later.
Okay.
And I had just come off a screening of Dawn at Lincoln Center. And, you know, being screened at Lincoln Center is a huge honor.
The Film Society there, yes.
Yes, wonderful organization. And I step out and get an email, you know, and firing me. And it, for a second, you know, it really did. It threw me, for my heart started racing, and then I got angry. And then I got, you know, the thing is, you know, and I tweeted this, was like, you can't fire an artist from their own mind. And just because people out there might not see me as an artist or as a strong thinking individual doesn't mean I'm not one. What they see or perceive isn't my issue, just like what my agent sees and perceives as being wrong or right isn't my issue. So I had to divorce myself from the idea. I mean, it was good. It really, for me, cut the final cord with Hollywood in a way.
As you've let your sort of cry from the heart come out here, do you find people are lining up with you and saying, yeah, Rose, you know, say it? Or are they saying, careful, Rose, or what are you talking about?
I've certainly been, you know, I had a manager for a little while longer after that. That was during that period of the agent firing. And he said, I said, you know, no one can fire me. I'm unfireable because it's my mind. And all of us, I mean, if we get fired from any single job we have, that's a job or a situation. It is not our mind. It's not who we are. So, and then he said, no, but they cannot hire you. So it's all about the threat, the implied threat.
Rose McGowan's new film is Dawn. You can take a look at our website, onpointradio.org. She joins us today from Culver City, California. We're talking about sex, gender, and Hollywood. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about sex, gender, and Hollywood, about sexism and the way Hollywood still treats women. Here's another clip from the new short film Dawn, directed by Rose McGowan. Dawn's a teenage girl, 1961, develops a crush on a boy she's met at a gas station. Doesn't end well, but in this clip she's reading an advice column from a magazine.
What I Look For in a Date by Tab Hunter. I like a girl who's open to adventure and doesn't get all sore if plans change. I like a girl who's sweet, who's easy to get along with. No one likes a pushy girl. And it's nice when a girl is curious and asks questions, but not too many questions.
Not too many questions, and it ends not well there in Dawn, directed by Rose McGowan. Of course, women do take the main stage and do well, but even then, here was 2014. Kate Blanchett won the Oscar for Best Actress for a performance in Blue Jasmine. In her acceptance speech at the Oscars, she talked about, gave her thank yous and then used the platform to address sexism in Hollywood.
To the audiences who went to see it, and perhaps those of us in the industry who are still foolishly clinging to the idea that that female films with women at the center are niche experiences, they are not. Audiences want to see them, and in fact, they earn money. So the world is round, people.
The world is round. And here's one little bit more I've got to play. This is an episode of the Comedy Central series Inside Amy Schumer. Amy stumbles upon Tina Fey and Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Patricia Arquette celebrating Julia Louis-Dreyfus's last day as a, shall we say, sexually appealing actress. This skit's called The Last Mmable Day, using language not appropriate for public radio here. And the women here explain the signs that you are, one is, approaching that day.
Nobody really overtly tells you, but there are signs. You know how Sally Field was Tom Hanks's love interest in Punchline, and then like 20 minutes later she was his mom in Forrest Gump?
Or you might get offered a rom-com with Jack Nicholson where you're competing with another woman. Or I just had an audition for Mrs. Claus.
You're kidding me.
I read for that part.
I read for that too.
You did?
Hey, who got that?
J-Lo. Oh, she'll be good.
She's going to be really good.
Really good. Mm. Or you go to a movie set, you go to wardrobe, mm-hmm. and the only thing they have for you to wear are long sweaters, like cover you up head to toe kind of thing.
J-Lo as Mrs. Claus. Yeah, she got that role. There's Amy Schumer, Tina Fey, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Patricia Arquette there, The Last Day. And it can be just that tough. Rose McGowan is talking about it openly, saying she's assembling an army to try and push the other way.
But it's not easy. Rose joins us from Culver City, California. And with us right now from Washington is Kelsey McKinney, culture writer for Fusion. Kelsey McKinney, thank you very much for being with us as well.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for having me.
Rose McGowan has been making a lot of noise about this lately. She's got people talking about it again. We've got this big study that came out just a couple of weeks ago with the numbers. I mean, you say it's worse really than that study indicated. I'm looking back. You wrote for Vox earlier in the year that women still make up only 15% of Hollywood's leading roles. Why is that? If Cate Blanchett is right that there's bank to be made here, that people want to see more, why 15%?
Well, I think answering a question that is essentially saying why is the patriarchy an institutional structure is a really difficult question to answer.
Okay.
But 50% of women are starring in films right now. And what we've seen also is that there are very few women behind the scenes. So Rose being a director is actually incredibly rare. Women only make up 13% of directors in Hollywood for most like major high-grossing films. And what we see is when women are put behind the scenes, they cast women in roles that are complex and they put them in front of the camera at the lead, in the lead position. And so I think it's not only a problem of there aren't enough roles for women in Hollywood, it's also a problem of there aren't women to cast them in those roles. And then once they're there, 77% of Oscar voters are male. So it's like all along the path, there's no room for women to succeed. And that's, I think that's why what Rose is doing is so important and so great.
Patriarchy
Thank
in
you.
Charge. Rose, why does it stay that way? If society's
well, because
changing.
Writers, well, society is definitely changing. And that's the funniest part. It's like this bastion of white males here. And they're told consistently and continually, write what you know. Well, if what you know is a basic and reductive square mind, you're not putting anything interesting on the screen, are you? And you're not putting subtle characters with thought, and not just about women or men. Even the men are one-dimensional. You know, I mean, it's yes, there are more one-dimensional men, but does that make our movie-going experience any better? Does that make our experience? We're putting things into a time capsule, and nobody's minding the store because it's status quo and it's business as usual. But business as usual is boring.
Kelsey, it is business. I mean, if the dollars would flow to a richer representation of, what, our population, wouldn't Hollywood follow?
Yeah, but, well, so I think this is kind of a funny thing about Hollywood is that you have all of these producers and major heads of companies who are men and who want to believe that movies about men make more money than movies about women. They want to believe that men are the ones that go see movies, and neither of those things are true. In 2014, most of the movies that, two of the hugest movies in 2014, Frozen and The Hunger Games, were about women, and they starred women, and they had very complex female figures in them. We've also seen in the past couple of years, men will turn out to see movies. They turned out to see Bridesmaids. They turned out to see Pitch Perfect. They turn out, if you put a woman in charge, or in the front of a movie, women will go see it. And on top of that, women will go see movies that aren't about men. This weekend, the highest grossing movie was Straight Out of Compton.
Yeah.
And it was 52% women in the theaters. So you can't, there's no longer room to say women won't pay to see movies and women won't pay to see movies about women, because every single year we're getting more and more data that says that that's not the case. So anyone sitting in their like C-suite saying that that is true is just fooling themselves.
Rose, if that's the case, then what's going on? Is this guys hanging on to their culturally
yes.
privileged position consciously? Like, you know, strengthen the make the moat deeper and wider, keep them away from our treasury.
Yes, I could go on and on. It really is. I mean, we've seen it. You know, when people had to. Pass the segregation, you know, the anti-segregation acts, like the people cling to their power when, and the castle, the infrastructure of Hollywood going on now with digital media, it's crumbling. So there's a lot of ways that they're clinging to their, you know, what they know. And Straight Outta Compton is great because what's going to happen now is you're going to see now a whole slew of movies about male rappers. Because it made money, but not a whole slew of movies where there you could have 52% of the audience that's female come to your movie. Or, if, in fact, if you want to make money, sell more tickets to them. I mean, it's just so stale, you know. And these there are good men here, to what I would ask them when you hear somebody slandering a woman in a writer's room or in a producer's room or something, make it so it's, or anybody out there in the world, if you hear anybody say anything that would be the equivalent of saying something racist, to which you would hopefully stop in the moment, do it for a woman. Do it for your sister. Do it for your mother. Do it for your friends. Because the only way we're going to change is if we start offering a quick chiropractic adjustment of the mind.
What an image, though, of Hollywood, bigwigs as kind of Bull Connor at the Edmund Pettus Bridge. Rose McGowan puts them.
I heard somebody say, if I give this job to a female director, but it's going to take one away from a man.
Get out. I mean, that just sounds ridiculous. How can someone say that?
Well, it sounds like a bad movie, doesn't it?
A movie that could not win. Eleanor in Cambridge, Massachusetts is calling. Eleanor, you're on the air with Kelsey McKinney and Rose McGowan.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I wanted to ask about what both of your perspectives were about the newest Mad Max Fury Road movie, because I saw some very complex female and male characters and not a lot of kind of over-sensationalized sexuality. I saw a lot of really supportive male roles there that really enabled the change from a patriarchal society to a more matriarchal society.
With Charlize Theron and sort of pushing in a new direction.
Yep. And Tom Hardy really being a much more intuitive, much more, you know, exploring issues of mental health, a much more dynamic male character than I've been used to support that female change.
Kelsey, evidence there of the ship turning?
Yeah, so I saw Mad Max Fury Road, and I did really like it, but mostly because I enjoy movies where things explode. I thought it was really interesting that the comments around that movie immediately afterward were that, and this is kind of what you're saying, is that the movie was this, like, massive turning point, and that it was doing something incredible for film, and that it, like, had broken down these gender barriers, and for me, and maybe Rose felt differently, but when I watched Mad Max Fury Road, I was like, yeah, this seems like people are portrayed as humans. Like, to me, Mad Max Fury Road is the bare minimum that we mm-hmm. can do in storytelling. That, yeah, people are complex.
Basically,
and they should
just
be portrayed that way.
Rose?
Sorry. I completely agree, Kelsey. It was, no, you're actually seeing something with some thought in it that's been given some thought, which is as it should be. It's not a massive turning point. It's what should be. If you're going to make an action film, make it smart. Make it have depth. If you're going to make a comedy, make it smart. Make it have depth. You can do that with every single type of movie. And you can do an explosion movie or an action film that's, you know, really gripping and also not just one-dimensional stereotypes. So George Stevens, he's just, you know, a really good director, basically. A man with some brain. And that's such a rarity, apparently, that it gets noticed. It should be noticed for being, you know, what it is. It could film it. The things that it's noticed for, it's quite sad.
Bring it on. Let's do it, Rose McGowan says.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Chris in Wisconsin Dells. Chris, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a real interesting story. My best friend from grade school went into modeling after high school, and then she decided she wanted to be an actor, and so she did her homework. She went to the actor's workshop for 2 years, the mm-hmm. good school, okay. And then she got recruited to play Jane Mansfield in the very bad movie about the life of Jane Mansfield, starring Lonnie Anderson and Arnold Schwarzenegger, and that's probably good for a laugh. And she was turned down for the job because she wasn't buxom enough and refused to have the augmentation surgery. And so she did 4 really bad movies and decided to get out of Hollywood. And now she's basically turned her life around. She's doing some really wonderful things with, like, National Geographic Society and stuff. But I was a film studies minor in college, so I know a little bit about the history of this stuff. And I thought maybe you guys could just go back, because your screener knew nothing about Jane Mansfield. And if you don't know anything about Jane Mansfield, you can't know about the fight about who is the best blonde to play the Academy Award-winning roles, and we all know who that was, in Hollywood in the 50s, and how this came out of World War II, and the government got involved in changing the image of women in this country so that they would make babies. And that's the truth of the matter.
Hey, Chris, let us pick it up. And yes, we've got a young crew here, and Jane Mansfield would predate many, many, many of them. But that's a funny story in itself, Kelsey. I mean, Jane Mansfield, famous in part for her bosom, right, back in the day. And now, years later, a movie about Jane Mansfield, and the actress is told she's not buxom enough. There's an irony in all that. But take us back to the Hays Code and what happened here. I mean, was it always baked in the cake of Hollywood that women would...
Will Hays, yeah. When he implemented the Hays Code, you know, it was kind of a... It was basically a return to Christian values kind of thing. But it did in some ways make movies have to be smarter. And it was actually implemented in the 40s, not 50s. But it was about... it kind of made people like, you couldn't have a gay character, you couldn't have this, you couldn't have that, because previous to that we had Hedy Lamarr swimming in the nude, God forbid. You know, there was some woman doing something like that. It was everything, you know, if you were a woman who had sex, you had to die or end up in jail. There were rules, you know, but in some ways it forced the writers to be a lot smarter. And back then, you know, the women were the draws at the box office. Women would still be the draws at the box office if anybody, instead of being in self-protective, self-congratulatory, like white male power mode, would be open to a lot more things. We'd have a lot more diverse world. And Hollywood, it's our number one export in the world. This is how America's seen in the world by what we put out in Hollywood.
No,
so
it matters.
Think about that for a second.
Sure.
It matters greatly.
Not just how we're seen, but how people understand society
to be. There's no mirror right now. There's no reflection on society. I mean, there's no like pushing an agenda forward. If Hollywood is accused of having an agenda, then have one.
Kelsey, take us back to that history. I mean, I'm reading you here. Maybe it came fully into effect in the 40s, but what, the Hays Code first passed in 34, and you write that roles for women on screen and behind the scenes dropped dramatically. Why?
Yeah, so before the Hays Code was implemented, women made up about 25 to 28% of speaking roles on screen, which is actually about the same as it is today, which is kind of ridiculous. And the Hays Code kind of came in, and I mean, just like Rose was saying, it came in and it provided a list of moral standards after World War I and said, like, here are the, and after World War II especially, said, like, here are some things that you're absolutely not allowed to do, including like licentious or suggestive nudity or like rape scenes. But it also had like a lot of suggestions that would say things like you have to be careful about lustful kissing or like the deliberate seduction of girls and all of these things. And so there was kind of a narrowing of the way that women could be portrayed on screen. Now, Rose is right that in some ways that can lead to some very smart storytelling. But what's interesting is that even after the Hays Code was revoked and replaced by what we have now, the rating system, what's interesting is that you still have, we are now back with women being far more sexualized on screen and far more consistently in roles that are non-speaking and purely about their looks. There's a study a few years ago that looked at films from 2007 to 2012 that said, I think USC Annenberg did it, that said that 31% of the time when women were on screen, they were showed in like sexy attire, and only 7% of the time were men. And so you have kind of this like massive divide that
I can verify
our caller
that
is right, that has been going back since the beginning of Hollywood. And even, yeah, go ahead. And even we are trying to work on it, there doesn't seem to be much progress at this point.
Right. From an insider perspective on that one, it's, you know, it's continual. You get the producers come and, you know, it's funny, like, it's basically like, oh, I'm a woman. That means that equals wearing no clothes in the cold with high heels. It's
hello.
You know, oh, hello. But the man gets a coat. The man gets a coat. It's very nice.
Yeah.
It's, thank you. Thank you so much.
Rose McGowan, please stand by there in California, and Kelsey McKinney in Washington. When we come back, Anne Hornaday joins us, movie critic for The Washington Post, with her thoughts about sex, gender, and Hollywood today. Rose McGowan's new film is Dawn. You can take a look at our website, onpointradio.org. She's making a lot of noise lately about what's going on with sexism in Hollywood, even now in 2015. This is On Point.
Hi.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at WBUR.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about sex, gender, and Hollywood, about sexism and the way Hollywood still treats women. Rose McGowan, actress and now director, has been making a lot of noise about this. She's out with a new film, Dawn. You can see a bit at our website, onpointradio.org. You may know her from Scream, Jawbreaker, The Doom Generation, Grindhouse, Charmed on television. Early this year, director of Selma, Ava DuVernay, talked about female empowerment and about makers talking about here about women in Hollywood and new avenues for their production, their expression.
This industry is no longer what it used to be. There are new ways to do things, new ways to shoot, new ways to monetize, new ways to distribute, new audiences to find, new ways to communicate with them that don't require some old man telling you you can do it. Ultimately, women have to make movies. And we don't need institutions to do that.
Hey, no problem. All kinds of new ways. So let's go, women, and leave that patriarchy behind. I don't know. Anne Hornaday joins us now from Baltimore, movie critic for The Washington Post. Anne, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
You must have heard the sound of Rose McGowan kicking the doors down a little bit here in recent weeks. What do you make? What do you make of it? Does it seem like a moment when Rose's complaint is particularly tangy? Is this a time for women to be particularly concerned about what's going on in Hollywood?
Definitely, I think we're in the middle of a moment, and I think it started, you know, the tumbrils were falling even before Kate Blanchett. You know, Meryl Streep had delivered a really strong speech at an awards ceremony mm-hmm. where she talked about how profitable female-driven movies are. Then we have Kate Blanchett. Then we have Patricia Arquette with her Oscar acceptance speech calling for equal pay. Then we have the sort of cascade of studies and statistics that Kelsey was citing. And when I went to the Cannes Film Festival this year, sexism in the industry and women's roles were a huge talking point. There were tons of panels and sidebars and programs to do with this subject matter. So definitely, I think it's very, very much in the air.
What do you make of Ava DuVernay's point she was making there to the female sort of empowerment group makers, saying, well, you don't need institutions these days. There's so many ways to get your work out. Let's just go do it.
I think it's wonderful, and I was hoping that we could highlight what she's doing, because not only, you know, she's always been someone who says don't wait to ask for permission, just do it. She has her own releasing company where she's releasing small uber independent films on her own, and you know, she's a great example of someone who mm-hmm. you know, earlier this year she made headlines for declining to direct the Black Panther superhero movie, and she, which, you know, that takes power. There's a lot of power in saying no, and she can do that because she has an enormous following on Twitter. She has this enormous community that she's managed to build around her of fans, of supporters, of fellow filmmakers. And I feel like that's exactly what Rose is doing, too, with her army. You know, it's just like you're bringing your people with you. And that's power. That's real power. And I just think it's terribly exciting. And I think it's just the right message to send.
And yet I wonder if it's if the old institutions aren't themselves still pretty powerful here. I mean, Rose, when you hear Ava say, you know, that doesn't require some old man telling you you can't do it. Women have to go make movies. We don't need institutions to do that. Are you saying amen or okay, but that's tough?
It's both. Of course it's tough. You know, I went out and made Dawn. I paid for it myself. I hawked an engagement ring. but I...
resourceful.
But, you know, it's both. It's both things. And when you are amassing an army, or Ava DuVernay, who's just a stellar, stellar person, who was also not nominated for Best Director, even though every other Best Picture nominated, Best Picture that was nominated had their Best Directors nominated. It's just so obvious, and it's embarrassing, and it's slow. So yes, all these statistics are coming out, all these things are coming out, but it is time to just do it. It's time to do it and The panels are great. All of the zeitgeist is great. It's amazing. I'm so happy this is happening. But now, okay, let's kick at the door, but now walk through. And the thing is, it's like, I want to say to the males out there, it won't actually change your life. It will only enrich it. There is nothing to be afraid of.
You know, if I may, Tom, to
yes,
Rose's point mm-hmm. just now, and it's also to Eleanor's point about Mad Max, one thing I did learn at one of the panels at Cannes, it was a panel done with Selma Hayek and Parker Posey and the producer Christine Vachon,
mm-hmm.
and they talked about the, you know, there is a place for men in this. Male stars have an enormous amount of power. They have a lot of power over script approval and, you know, their leading lady and their role as relates to the female role. And it takes a strong, you know, a really self-confident, unthreatened male actor to you know, like a Tom Hardy. I don't want to put words in his mouth. I have no mm-hmm. idea what his personal negotiations were. But kudos to him, you know, for being able to be secure enough to act alongside an incredibly strong woman. And, you know, I want to also say Tom Cruise has done that in his last two movies. Both Edge of Tomorrow and the new Mission Impossible feature really strong, competent female leads.
But is that Cruise getting into the screenplay and saying, I want you to muscle up that female lead?
Well, I don't know the details, but mm-hmm. I give him credit for not,
you know,
not saying,
power.
No, make her weaker. You know, mm-hmm. let me kiss her. Let me, you know, make her more romantic and soft. I mean, clearly, he could have said that, and mm-hmm. they probably would have kowtowed to it. So somewhere along the line, either he affirmatively changed it or he accepted what it was and ran with it. And I think that needs to be recognized. You know, Christine Vachon told a great story about trying to get Still Alice made, you know, the film that Julianne Moore won the Oscar for. It was really hard to find a male lead to, you know, who star in a film alongside clearly a female driven movie. And again, well done, Alec Baldwin, for not saying, well, I'll do it, but only if my role is beefed up.
Yes, there are men acting on it, talking about it. Of course, we had that hack at Sony, which revealed pay disparities off screen and on. Here's a little bit from George Clooney. This was with the BBC's Women's Hour earlier this year, saying that was one good thing to come out of the hack, some transparency about how much women, less than men, in Hollywood were getting paid.
The one good thing that's come out of it is the conversation about, you know, in very liberal Hollywood, that women aren't being paid the same and that there isn't the same. I think it's, there's something like 15 female directors in a town of directors. I think it's a very good conversation that they're starting to have,
wow, in 2014-15. Johnny in Dothan, Alabama. Johnny, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you for having me.
Hey, Johnny, are you there? Your line's... Oh, I'm sorry. We lost your line, Johnny. Forgive me. I hope we can get you again. Or Diane in Boston, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to point out a parallel. Some of the work I do and it's been doing and been happening probably the past couple of decades around the country, mostly among college students, is really looking at their own whiteness as a race. That which has seemed normal to society actually is a racialized normalcy that people are starting to really unpack and say, hey, wait, we're white, and that may seem like the normal in this country, but when you really unpack it, you begin to see that we have quite a bit of exemption from oppression, exemption from problems that people of color don't experience. There's actually an MTV show on right now called White People, consulted by a woman I work with who's written about white skin privilege, Peggy McIntosh.
So you're making the parallel of whiteness as a norm or maleness as a norm in films?
And exactly. I think that men, in the same way white people haven't had to look at whiteness because it's one of the privileges of whiteness. You don't have to look at it. It's normal. I think men have not looked at their maleness and the gender that is male. And I think until that men take that up, just for example, all of the school shootings, the majority of these things are happening, men are doing it, boys are doing it. And yet all the talk is as if it's we're doing it. And I, mm-hmm. you know, Tom, you in particular, with your position of power to really bring people on your show, men who are really beginning to say, we are training men as a gender. Men have certain mm-hmm. privileges, exemptions, we're trained in certain ways. and we consider that to be a part of the normal experience of America, when in fact, it's not normal for those of us who aren't men, although it is sort of subconsciously. But the benefit to deconstructing gender for men is that men can begin to decide whether they really want things to be normal in the way they are. So do you really want men to be gendered the way you're gendered? Do you really want to hang on to power unconsciously and treat women in certain ways and hold down sort of systemic oppression?
I mean, be careful, Diane, because maybe men do want that. Though you hold out this interesting possibility that you could look at it as liberation, not to just assume that. I mean, Kelsey McKinney, there is power, Kelsey, in a Hollywood reflecting a kind of male supremacy. And men beyond Hollywood could feel unsettled if that starts to...
God forbid men feel unsettled.
Yeah, right.
God forbid a man feels unsettled.
I take your point entirely, Rose, and yet what keeps people clutching that lever of power? It can be just that kind of fear.
But look,
I mean,
it's okay to
feel fear. It's okay to change
Mike and the delight that those men are taking in their bodies and each other's bodies and their friendship and their expanded emotional palette. I mean, I should think that especially for actors, it would be a joy to have a wider range of emotional expression to play. And so I do think that it's good for everyone. I think Diane put it absolutely perfectly. And I also think there's a lot of, let's look at the flip side, which is the psychic damage that it does to be, to internalize these norms and what that does to a young person's sense of self and subjectivity and agency in the world.
I mean, and I wonder if what has been seen as normative is starting or could start to seem more like a prison, not just to, women or people of color who have been on the outside, but to those with their hands on the levers of power.
Exactly right. Which is my point about the Magic Mikes of the world, which I think it's such a wonderful portrait of men liberating their own sort of sexual expression and notions of friendship and desire. I thought that was one of the most subversive things about those movies.
You've written about the deleterious effect of sexism on the film industry. You say there's sort of three pieces to it. Run us through those, Anne.
Well, we've talked about it. I mean, the first is really that it literally leaves money on the table. I mean, when you look at the films that have done well this year, many of them are female-driven. We have Inside Out, Pitch Perfect 2, Cinderella, 50 Shades of Grey. Spy and Trainwreck also did incredibly well. And often, because these are not special effects spectacles, they're made for lower budgets, making them more profitable when they do well, which they often do. Then we have the kind of the monoculture problem that Rose is talking about, just the sheer boredom of seeing these same tropes and these same conventions trotted out over and over again. So that's an aesthetic minus that we're doing ourselves out of really interesting, rich, textured stories. And then that third is what we were just talking about, which is, I think, deeply psychological and almost spiritual in terms of what we're telling ourselves about who we are as individuals and as a culture.
Rose, when you talk about assembling an army, is it an army of liberation here, of psychologies? How deep do you see Hollywood's power to either sustain an old perspective on the world or propagate a new one, a fresh one?
I think there is a new and a fresh one happening, and Hollywood is propagating the old one, and they're butting heads greatly right now, which is fun to watch in some ways. It's not as fun to be in it. But I do think that the new model will overtake at some point. But why not? Like, again, it's if we... And Diane, thank you for your call, by the way. Mm-hmm. You had a wonderful point. What I want an army of just humans. I want an army of people that think, that feel, men, women, every race, every creed, every nationality, every whatever it is. Like, why can't we create a country with no borders where we all exist, a digital culture? Why can't we exist in our own world with our own worldviews? Why do we have to, ascribe to this set forth notion of what we are supposed to be like as men, as boys, as girls, as women? We don't. You can tell yourself a different narrative. You can have a different life experience. And I want, I've had a very rich and wonderful life experience being able to think differently. And I want that for other people as well, because it's so much fun. That's the thing of it. That's what they're missing, is the fun.
Kelsey, what's the half-life of the way that Rose is bemoaning in Hollywood here? It's 2015. One might have thought we'd be past this conversation by this time, but here we are fully in the midst of it. Does it feel to you as though something's breaking, changing, opening up here? The numbers, as you've reported and others, suggest we're still got a ways to go.
Yeah, I mean, I agree fully with what Rose is saying, and I think that I too would love to be completely past this. I would love for us to be making movies about all sorts of stories and things that are more complex than just simple narratives. I think that right now, in terms of what's being produced on a massive level for popular consumption, I think we're starting to see some shifts in that. I think we're starting to talk about movies that aren't necessarily about a white man going on a quest and, like, getting the girl. But I think more than that, we're seeing kind of like a grassroots anger that could boil over into Hollywood. I think what Rose just said about how she feels like the world that she lives in is very different than the one that Hollywood is portraying on the screen can be really true in some areas of America today. And I think that what we all want in this panel is for Hollywood to not only represent the world that we see, but just push it into something that's like better and newer and more equal.
And we just got half a minute. Is Hollywood the roadrunner out, you know, in thin air, out off the cliff here? Or is it banking on ancient icons and story forums always being the way in those blockbusters?
Well, I think it's always been a lagging indicator just because of production schedules. You know, they tend to be just 2 years behind on everything. But another factor that we don't have time to go into now, though, is international financing, you know, and the role that the way that films are financed and also the power of the international market when it can, you know, it's responsible for up to 70% of a film's revenues, that is another variable in all of this.
Does it drag us forward or drag us back, Anne, that?
I think it's putting some brakes on, unfortunately.
Anne Hornaday, we're out of time. Anne with The Washington Post, thank you so much for coming in, Anne.
Thank you.
Kelsey McKinney at Fusion, thank you, Kelsey.
Thank you.
And Rose McGowan, the new film is Dawn. Rose, thanks for speaking up. Thanks for joining us today. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.